This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervie and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening around the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervie, and I am the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I'm here in studio to be the managing partner of your life. And here with me is the beautiful, and I only say beautiful because she's got her eyebrows. I don't have to. Your eyebrows are done.
I did.
They're freaky.
I know they're a little dark. I got them microbladed.
Well, let me introduce you first, because people don't know you just by eyebrows.
All right.
And you got filler in your cheeks, too.
I have everything done in my face.
Wow.
And it I talk is... about it, too. Or nobody else talks about it. I will tell you where to get filler, how to do Botox, how to do your skin. I'm not one of those women that just lie about it. Oh, it's natural. It's not natural. I use tons of lasers and skin tighteners. You can ask me, and I will tell you. On agelessandhealthy.com.
Let me finish. It's Jillian Barbary right here.
You know what? Shut up. I love Jillian, but I'm not Jillian.
Okay. It's Carrie Kasem.
Thank you.
Carrie had a very busy week, I know, because, first of all, before I talk about your week, Carrie, do you know I just got off the field? It was my last game coaching my little four-year-old's t-ball team.
Aww.
And I am celebrating. Wow, was that an awful experience.
But you did it.
I did it. It's a greater accomplishment. I'll be arguing in front of the Court of Appeal on June 15th, actually, for a case. And I think completing coaching one season of my four-year-olds is a greater accomplishment than arguing before the justices of the Court of Appeal.
I'm going to have to agree with you. First of all, because it's your son, and I think that's awesome.
No, it's impossible.
He'll never forget it.
Those little kids, I wanted to kill them. I want to kill them. They could care less about playing t-ball. And the parents were doing whatever they could to leave me alone with the kids.
You were babysitting.
One little guy came up to me and says, "Teacher, I want to go to the bathroom." I'm like, "Your parents are sitting right there. Go tell them. Do I look like a teacher to you?"
Did he run off crying?
He didn't run off crying. And then he says he wants to play first base. I said, "There's someone playing first base." He says, "Well, I want to play first base." And I said, "We can only have one person playing first base at a time." He said, "No, we can't. We have two people playing."
Oh, no.
I just wanted to take the bat and slug his head over the fence.
Oh, my gosh. These are children you're talking about. We're going to lose all our viewers now. Say you're kidding.
I am kidding. I had a great time. I love my little Hudson, and he did great today. He hit a home run. Well, he didn't, but whatever. I told him he did.
So cute.
You had your father's 85th birthday this week.
I did. I made a long-distance dedication. And for those of you who don't know who my dad was, it's Casey Kasem. So, yeah, so he would have been 85 years old on April 27th. So I put up a nice little picture on my Facebook page.
It was great. I love that picture.
Aww,
man, he had a lot of hair back then.
We both. Did you see? Everybody thinks I had a perm, but I have this naturally extremely thick curly hair, and people think that's my fake hair, and I have straight hair, but we both had the same exact hair.
Really?
Yeah.
You guys look the same, actually. But
yeah,
I think your brother Mike looks more like your dad than you do.
They look like twins. In fact, a couple of years ago, you may have seen this, where they both had beards and they were both doing movies on movie sets. I put this up a couple of years ago.
Oh,
picture
you put it
side
up,
by
because
side.
Your dad wasn't, he didn't have
no,
a beard
no, no,
a couple
no.
years ago.
No. No, but he was on a movie set at age 40, and my brother, right around age 40, was on a movie set. They both had beards.
Right.
And my dad was on a movie called Glory Stompers, and my brother was doing a movie in Asia, and they looked like the same person. You couldn't tell who was who. It's crazy.
Who did the writing for your dad on his show?
Oh, a few people.
Yeah. Were they members of the Writers Guild?
I'm sure they were.
Because I'll tell you.
I'm guessing the show was union, right?
It wasn't.
American Top 40. The writers may not have been, but his show, I know, because he gets residuals and he gets, what does he get?
Jonathan hasn't been introduced yet. Yeah. And Carrie's having
conversation already.
I am.
It's nice. And I'm going to introduce Jonathan after the break, but we do have the expert. He will answer every question. By the way, if you have any questions on this pending writer strike, the WGA strike, you call 800-222-5222. 800-222-KBC if you want to talk the writer's strike, because it's going to affect a lot of the entertainment that we all hold near and dear to our hearts, especially for some of us who are bored out of our minds at nighttime and want to watch TV or want to go to the movies. We have to find out how the next few months are going to be affected if the writers go on strike. And we're going to talk about that today. But before we do, and before we take a break, I do want to ask you quickly... Because you said something just before we went on the air about your dad's 85th birthday, and that his wife was where was she during this birthday?
I don't know. She's somewhere in the world, I guess. You know,
she missing?
I don't think she's missing. She just won't tell anybody where she is. She'll tell you she's in Israel. Then she'll tell you she's in Norway. Then people will spot her here. Three times in a row. She's trying to evade the proceedings. We have a wrongful death suit on her.
You have a wrongful death?
Yes, you know that, Alan.
What is it?
It's a wrongful death suit. It's my brother, my sister, myself, and my dad's brother. The only way we can get justice, because the DA here in Los Angeles would not prosecute, even though there was she had it for 11 months. And the head detective on it said, if this isn't a case of elder abuse, I don't know what is. But she decided that she didn't want to prosecute it for whatever reason. And so the only legal action we could take and the only justice we could have would be to put a wrongful death suit on her.
What is the status of the suit right now?
I mean, it's moving forward. We're doing well. I think it's good.
Well,
we're winning stuff. Little
you're
things,
winning
little
stuff.
Victories.
Come on. Have you had depositions? Have we deposed Jean Kasem?
Bingo. Bingo, bingo, bingo. She, in my opinion, is pissing off the judge because she will not. We're going to our fourth court date because we can't find her. We can't depose her. We can't do anything.
Can we get her on the show?
Oh, right.
Don't think so?
Yeah. You want to try?
I want to find out why she is not showing up for her deposition. And
well,
what kind of discovery is going on.
Well, she said that first we had to do it in Israel because she was living in Israel, but then wouldn't show an address. No joke. Would not give an address. The judge asked over and over. The last court date we had, they actually tried to get her on the phone, her own lawyer, and couldn't find her.
Maybe you could do it at the Dead Sea.
Maybe. But then she changed it to now she's living in Norway. And then,
I want to work on that. I want to find Jean Kasem. It's like, where in the world is Carmen?
Carmen Miranda.
We need to find out where Jean Kasem is. But more importantly, we need to talk about this WGA strike that may take place, may start as of 12:01 Tuesday morning. The contract actually ends midnight on Monday. And they don't have a deal yet. We have Jonathan Handel, who we're going to speak to. He is the authority. This is the guy who the Hollywood Reporter trusts with all of their writing and all of the work revolving around the strike and other issues too. SAG-AFTRA, they're facing a potential strike as well in a few weeks. So we have a lot to talk about with Jonathan Handel. After that, later in the show, we have David Atkins on, and David Atkins is a WGA member. We're going to find out from the horse's mouth what he thinks about what is going on with the writers. He has written movie with Johnny Depp started in Arizona Dream and Novocaine with Steve Martin. He's assistant professor of communications at Quinnipiac University out east, and we'll talk to him later. But stay tuned to Gervie's Law because we have Jonathan Handel with us right after this break.
News.
Talk.
Evolve. 790 KABC.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
Spring fever is here. It's that time when everyone and everything goes crazy. And that's what happened to my sewer line. Yeah, that's right. 3 hours before a dinner party, it clogged and water backed up into the sinks. Fortunately, I did know who to call. SoCal Plumbers 911. SoCal Plumbers 911 is the referral service for the very best plumbers in LA. Here's how to get in touch with them. Go to SoCalPlumbers911.com or call 1-877-PLUMBER. They're offering $50 off your entire bill just to try them out. For any plumbing problem, remember 1-877-PLUMBER.
A reminder, we have a free Money Matters Retirement Seminar Tuesday, May 9th, Culver City, Thursday, May 11th, Woodland Hills, or May 13th, Orange. Find out if you are properly diversified so you can take advantage of stock market gains when possible, while also having a sales strategy to help protect your retirement from a crash. The best time to take Social Security. 5 strategies to save on income tax and more. If you're retired or retiring soon, don't miss it. Reserve at moneymatters.net. That's moneymatters.net or call 800-994-0302.
Ever wonder what Dr. Drew and Mike talk about during the break?
Let's turn on the mic and listen.
Steve and Bernard watch us through the glass and they just see on mute you and I barreled over laughter. And it's so sad because if the mic's flicked on accidentally, we'd both lose our jobs.
And they think, why can't they get that magic on the air?
Well, because the ACLU would crucify us. That's why.
I don't know, maybe the ACLU. LAPD would show up. Dr. Drew.
Midday Live. With Mike Catherwood. Weekdays, noon to 3 on KABC. Talk Radio 790.
KABC.
Mayday, Mayday. It's Mayday.
Obama's picking up $400,000 a speech.
And what is Congressman Brad Sherman in the San Fernando Valley smoking on the next McIntyre in the Morning, 5 to 10, right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC?
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach. So you get what we had here last week. Which is the way he wants it. Well, he gets.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervey and Carrie Kasem now at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
Wow. That's pretty mellow stuff.
I love this song.
I'm Alan Gervey. I'm here with Carrie Kasem. You're listening to Gervey's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. And we are going to talk Hollywood now because it's important. We have a pending strike coming, Writers Guild. The contract expires on Monday at midnight. And right now there is no new contract. And we need to know what the implications are for you, people who consume the entertainment in this country. And there's no one better to have to talk about it than Jonathan Handel. Handel on the Law, that's how I know him.
Not really.
Not really.
Jonathan is an entertainment and technology attorney. He's of counsel to the law firm of Troy Gould. He is an impressive guy. This guy graduated from Harvard undergrad and Harvard Law. He was a computer scientist, an adjunct professor at UCLA, USC, and Southwestern Law Schools. He does an entertainment technology newsletter. He's prolific in his writing. And, of course, for The Hollywood Reporter, he is a contributing editor, writing a lot of stuff. And we have him in studio. Jonathan, thanks for coming down here. on the day before the strike, potentially, to Gervie's Law.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's great to have you. And before we talk about the specifics of the WGA pending strike, I want to talk some generalities. You have so much experience with unions, and you wrote a piece for The Hollywood Reporter not too long ago called The New National Right to Work Bill Threatens Hollywood Unions.
Right.
And now we have a new president, 100 days into the presidency with Trump. We have Republicans who are pushing right to work. We had the Friedrichs case last year in the Supreme Court. And we need to talk about whether unions are being marginalized and whether they are not as strong as they were, because there's this whole movement of, if we don't like the politics of the union, we don't have to pay the dues. And if we don't pay the dues, then what is going to happen to the unions? How are they going to have any power?
Well, unions have been being marginalized since at least the administration, ironically, Ronald Reagan, who got his political start by being president of the Screen Actors Guild, of all things, then became governor. Since that time, union density, the percentage of jobs that are union, has plummeted in this country, and in the private sector is less than 6%.
Really? It's that low?
It's that low. Less than 6% of private sector jobs in this country are unionized. So if you have this mental image of the, you know, factory worker, the auto worker, the steel worker, whatever, with the lunch pail, and he typically in that image, he or she is union, he or she doesn't exist anymore. Those jobs are not union. Those jobs, you know, I had a Nissan when I first moved out here. It was made in Smyrna, Tennessee, right to work state. It was not a union factory. That's been the reality. And we've seen during that same time period an enormous growth in income and wealth inequality in this country.
Do you think that's directly attributable to unions not having the strength and power and having a bigger schism between the haves and the have-nots because of this right to work? And explain what right to work is for people who don't really know.
Sure. So let me start first with the first question. It is due, I think, to two factors. One is the decline in union power, because if you think about it, you know, no union negotiates a contract and says, let's set the wages at what they are now. No, the purpose of the union is to set the wages at a level that's more livable, and so by definition, you're raising the floor.
Right.
So with weaker unions or no unions, that's not being done. But the other factor is, and it's also the factor that's driving this strike and the strike 10 years ago, is technology. Technology allows companies to do several things. One is to centralize control. You know, if you think about, you know, oh, we're operating a factory in China. Well, no, you wouldn't be if it weren't for, first, the invention of containerization. But then, you know, how do you keep track of those containers? Well, with barcodes on them. How do you know where things are instantaneously? How do you actually exercise control from California over a factory in China? Through telecommunications, through video conferencing, through computers, through emails, through up to the second updates on
everything
the production line.
Everything technological.
All of it technological. And the other thing about technology is that it allows you to redefine the boundaries of the firm. So, for example, you might say, I'm a taxi company, but I think I'll be a taxi company without actually owning any taxis or employing any drivers. Well, the name for that, of course, is Uber. And that's only doable if you've got technology that lets you disaggregate the different functions and say, we'll just be in charge of the matchmaking function, matching the people and the drivers, but the drivers will be independent contractors. And
so isn't that really affecting the strength of the worker when we marginalize the unions, when we take away their power? The Friedrichs case, there may be another case going to the Supreme Court this year from Illinois regarding payment of dues.
Right.
And of course, for people who don't understand right to work.
Why don't we get into right to work, just sort of what that is, because, you know, the it sounds sort of attractive, like you don't agree with the union. Why should you pay the dues? Well, here's the answer. In right-to-work states, which are mostly Southern and Rocky Mountain, but if this bill ever passed, would be nationwide, you get the benefit. Hear it as carefully. You get the benefit of the union contract without having to pay union dues. Now, that sounds like the definition of a freeloader. The way it works right now in a state like California that's not right-to-work, you don't have to join the union. You can go what's called financial core, pay about 95% of the union dues, and carve out the dues that the union is spending, if any, on political lobbying. But you still have to pay for the union functions, the 95%.
But if
you
don't
agree,
you
don't have to pay anything.
So if you went on a strike, then there would be no more scabs if it was right to work, correct?
No, on the contrary, the union can't discipline people who are not members. So people can work union, non-union, cross the line. The whole thing falls apart. And so it's a Republican attempt and an attempt by people, you know, wealthier people in control of capital to undermine workers by leading them to believe that the union is against their interests. Now, any human institution is imperfect. So any union you can point to and say they're not making a good judgment, or there's certain corruption, or there's this, or there's that.
Right.
And that becomes the hook that people hang their hat on.
Well, that's the argument. And, you know, it's kind of a misnomer to call it right to work, because a lot of people would say it's not a right to work. But the question becomes, should people be able to have First Amendment rights to not support a union, which they don't believe in the politics of the union, or should the union not be able to play politics, and then everyone should be able to benefit from whatever benefits they provide?
Okay, but under the system as it exists now in a non-right-to-work state like California, you can go financial core, and then you are no longer subsidizing the union's political speech.
Where's that money going?
But you're still paying 95% of the dues.
Roughly,
but they only
95%.
Take 5% and to lobby?
I'm thumbnailing. It's 5%. It's 10%. It varies depending on the union.
And where's the 95% going, Jonathan?
To the organizing, to the enforcement of the contract, to the negotiation of the contract.
Isn't that still a benefit of the union?
Well, it's exactly a benefit of the union. I mean, if the worker wants the benefit of the higher wage rates that the union gets, of the health plan, the pension,
right,
the whatever, the residuals, that doesn't appear by magic. You've got to have a union staff that negotiates these contracts, that strategizes about them.
Absolutely, because the union wouldn't have any function if it didn't have these abilities to negotiate collective bargaining. Speaking of collective bargaining, let's talk about the WGA strike now.
Sure. And by the way, I should give a disclaimer, which is that 25 years ago, for 1 year, I was one of the associate counsel, one of the legal staff at the Writers Guild West. So my job was to help enforce the contract by bringing arbitration cases against employers over compensation, residuals,
right,
credits, and so forth. That's some time ago.
So that's some time ago. And then, of course, he wrote the book on this, Hollywood on Strike, which chronicled and analyzed the Hollywood's writer's strike from 2007-2008, which I believe was a 100-day strike.
That's right.
And a lot of the writers will say it was very successful. They ended up getting a lot of benefits, especially from other media other than television, movies. Now we're facing a new strike. Tell us, as simply as you can, what are the issues? Because a lot of people will read about this stuff and just say, man, my head is turning.
Or I'm not going to get to watch my favorite show next year, like me. 13 Reasons Why, without a second season, oh my, I don't want to say I would die, because that's what
By the way, we need to get the folks on from 13 Reasons Why. We will have them on the show. I guarantee it.
Best show on the air.
Unbelievable.
Best show on the
air. We will have Lindsay Lohan on.
Oh, you haven't watched it. I thought for a second you had me going. You always do that to me.
What, you don't know about Lindsay Lohan, how she's a big supporter of 13 Reasons Why?
Everybody is. Have you seen all the tweets about it? It's the most tweeted show on Twitter ever. It's unbelievable.
Is it a union show? Let's talk.
Well,
go ahead, Jonathan.
Sure. So let's talk what the issues are here. And they are unlike the past strike and most Hollywood strikes. It's not about residuals. Now, residuals, for those who aren't in the circle here, are royalties that the union negotiates for actors. The actors' union, the directors' union, the writers' union negotiates. And those royalties get paid whenever something is rerun or reused in a different medium.
Can I just tell people real quick? Did you see the book that he has? It's called Entertainment Residuals. What do they say? The periodic table?
On mushrooms.
On mushrooms.
It's
worse
table
than that.
Yeah.
It is how residuals are handed out. And there's so many different, what would you call
different
that,
codes? Different formulas? Colors, because they're different formulas. That's right.
I would be completely confused just trying to understand how that would work.
I don't know
how people get residuals when there's that many rules.
My first job out of college, I worked for the company that invented the internet, but that didn't make my head.
Al Gore?
Actually, before Al Gore, but yes, he was in the halls. A company called BBN in Cambridge, but you know what? That didn't make my head hurt compared to preparing this chart.
Wait a second, with all your accomplishments, you've never had a hurt head.
I'm taking a picture of this and I'm putting it up at Garvey's Law on Facebook and Twitter. You
Do
won't
it right
believe
now.
It. I'm doing it right now.
Uh-oh, there we go. We're
okay,
social,
I
want to
hear the issues.
Talk. So the issues are, rather than residuals, they are technological change issues, which the residuals issues were too. How do you, what new formula for the new technological change? But here, it's several things. One, first of all, I'll start with a simple issue. The health plan is running deficits.
Yeah.
Okay, everyone can understand what that means. The health plan's running deficits.
Aren't most.
Big deficits aren't most, but this is running, you know, so they want more money to shore up the health
plan.
When
you say they, be specific.
That would be the writers. The Writers Guild wants more money to shore up its health plan.
Okay.
Okay, now we get to the more complicated one. TV writers' incomes are down sharply, about 25%, according to the Writers Guild, over a period of several years. Now, that seems strange because there are all these new series. You know, the number of scripted series on the air, you know, more than doubled in the last 6 or 8 years, blah, blah, blah. But I asked the question, well, you know, we know that a lot of those series are shorter. How many episodes get produced in aggregate across all series in a given year? And when I was able to find data on that, which no one else had, actually, I found that in a 4-year period where the number of series had gone up by 50%, the number of writers had gone up working in television by 20%, but the number of episodes, which is what they get paid for, they get paid to write, not they don't write a series, they write episodes.
We're
right?
down.
Well, it actually did briefly go down, and at the end of the 4 years, it was up only by 6%. 20% more writers, 6% more work. That's a disconnect in the labor market.
Sure.
And so the problem is twofold. When you have these shorter series, which are the Netflix-compatible series that people binge
on. So when you're
on.
Talking about shorter series, you're talking about 12 or 13 episodes potentially.
Or 6 or 8 or 10, yeah, exactly.
Versus 22
was the standard. Current network standard, yeah. That's right. And, you know, no one's going to binge 22 episodes. So, you know, people are making this stuff for Netflix. And what happens to the writer is twofold. One is there's less work for them to do, so they get paid less. The other is they get held for the entirety of the year anyways, under exclusivity. They get put on ice and can't work.
And they can't make the money they would have on a 22-episode series.
Right. So on a 22-episode series where you might be working 30-some-odd weeks, you know, then you get held for the other 20 or so weeks of the year. It's not a big problem. But, you know,
Do you think that's the major sticking point on why there is an agreement a day before a strike?
It's that and that there's sort of an array of issues that the Writers Guild has brought in. And there has been, to my perception, a failure to sort of focus down and to funnel. You know, to put this in perspective, what the writers are looking for when it comes to the TV and also the screenwriters' incomes are down and the other points that they're looking for, they were looking for a package 20 days ago at $535 million over 3 years, the value of the contract enhancements they wanted. The studios were thinking more in the realm of 180, which is a $350 million gap. Now, I think we're down to a $250 million gap, but you know what?
Still a lot.
Well, a quarter of a billion among friends is, you know,
And the industry is last year $51 billion?
Well, let's talk about that. So I've talked to analysts about that. That's the Writers Guild says that's the operating profit that the major companies made. But they're not looking.
So that's what they're. Is that net? Or would that
well, it's a net numbers mostly. It's hard to tell. Actually.
Hollywood net, which means nothing.
Well, it's not Hollywood net. It is a Wall Street thing. Because you're right, Hollywood net is completely out the window.
Okay.
But this is more a Wall Street number. But there is a sense in which when they fly from Los Angeles, where they plead poverty, they swap briefcases somewhere over the Mississippi, and by the time they're in New York, it's look how well we're doing to the stockholders.
Right.
And, you know, that $51 billion includes theme parks, it includes cable television, local cable television operations, cruise ships.
Okay, so
all sorts of things that really are attenuated from the writer.
Exactly. It's not all specific to the writer. We have to take a quick break. Before we do, I'm not going to do a teaser. I just got to find out in one word, will there be a strike on Tuesday morning?
Probably, but it's unsure.
That's not an answer. Yes or no?
Well, if you're betting, let's say you're in Vegas. So you're going to put 100 on yes or 100
yes.
on no?
I'm saying yes.
I'm terrible in Vegas. My friends buy me chips. We'll be back up
when
Vegas,
we
right?
Okay, good job. When we come back, we're going to talk about how this strike, if it occurs, probably maybe no, I don't know. If it occurs, how it's going to affect you and your entertainment needs. And we're going to bring on David Atkins, who is a WGA member, and he'll talk about his thoughts about a pending strike. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Choosy moms choose Talk Radio 790 KABC. Right now with Sprint, lease one Galaxy S8 and get a Galaxy S7 Edge lease. That's two Galaxies for the price of one. Plus, get unlimited data, talk, and text with Sprint's unlimited plan, which works great for you, even if you say it like the announcer guy in a movie trailer. Right now, from the creators of Sprint's unlimited plan, comes an unbelievable offer that will save you money. Lease a Galaxy S8 and get a Galaxy S7 Edge lease. That's two Galaxies for the price of one. Sprint works for me. Call 1-800-SPRINT-1 or visit Sprint.com/now.
GS-8-3125 per month, GS-7-0 per month after $28.96 per month. Service credit requires two new lines of service for well-qualified customers with 18-month leases. Early termination results and remaining balance due credit applied within two invoices. Excludes taxes, surcharges, roaming, and premium content. Streams video at HD 1080p, music up to 1.5 megabits per second, gaming up to 8 megabits per second, subject to credit, $30 activation fee, prohibited network use rules, and data deprioritization. Coverage and offer not everywhere. Restrictions apply.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
You can learn to DIY just about anything.
Today, we'll be making our very own bath beads. We'll need mineral oil, ammonia, and gosh, I feel like I'm forgetting something.
After all, some things are better left to the pros, like buying a home. Because without an expert to guide you, you're just asking to get burned.
Oh, look at that. It also works as a hair remover.
So DIY yourself a favor and get Realtor. Head to Realtor.com/getrealtor today. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
If you have hard water, the lime scale not only leaves white spots, it clogs pipes and breaks down appliances, costing you hundreds of dollars in energy and wear. Eliminate lime scale and other water issues like brown staining, bad odors, and lead with HydroCare water products available from Wave Home Solutions. Wave's affordable systems don't use salts or chemicals. You'll love the way your water tastes, smells, and looks. Satisfaction guaranteed. For more information, go to goodclearwater.com. That's goodclearwater.com.
Wake up! Wake up! With Doug McIntyre in the morning.
Steve Zimmer, the president of the LAUSD Board of Education, pushed for these chicken rules over the chickens that are sold in the cafeterias have to be
cage-free and humanely raised.
And they have to have music
organic
in their lives and
Ivy League education.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the kind of madness that chews up man hours and lawyers and preoccupies them. And meanwhile, they don't have books.
McIntyre in the morning. Now with Leanne tweeting news. 5 to 10 on KABC.
You've heard of Murphy's Law, but have you heard of Gervey's Law? Anything that can go wrong can be made right. Now, here are your hosts, Carrie Kasem and Alan Gervey.
Yes, we're back. We are talking about the potential TV writers' strike.
TV and film.
Of course, I was going to say that.
Oh, I'm so
just
sorry.
Reading. I'm reading an article. I'm in the middle of reading an article by Jonathan Handel that says TV writers speak out on strike plans and why The Last Walkout was a huge success. That was The Hollywood Reporter, and they talk about the success of it. I'm not sure, Jonathan, if based on what you write in The Hollywood Reporter, whether the writers, TV and film, are as optimistic.
Well, I should say, by the way, that piece was not an opinion piece from me about success. That was a quote from one of the writers. The writers that we interviewed, we've interviewed showrunners. That article, we interviewed sort of mid-level writers, showrunners being the top
right.
of the food chain.
Right.
And the writers uniformly believe, as does the leadership, that the strike 10 years ago was a success. Many other business people in Hollywood, as well as crew members, and I got an anguished email from a crew member just today, believe exactly the opposite, that the strike was a complete disaster, screwed things up, and you know, all sorts of words that we can't say on the
air.
Well,
you know, we need to find out. We need to get the evidence, and Gervie's Law will not just rely on Jonathan Handel. We're bringing on WGA member, an assistant professor of communication at Quinnipiac University. I probably didn't say that right, but David Atkins is used to that. David Atkins wrote Arizona Dream, starring Johnny Depp, and Novocaine, starring Steve Martin. He's written a number of other produced movies, and he has been a professor, a faculty member at the graduate film program at New York University's Tisch School of the Arts. David, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Thank you, Alan. Pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you. You heard Jonathan Handel talking about the success of the last strike, which took place in 2007, and it was about 100 days into 2008. What is your perspective on these strikes and whether it really is something that will benefit writers in the end?
Well, Jonathan, I was listening to what he was saying, and he's a smart guy. I like Jonathan. I like the cut of his jib. I'm not quite sure he would say that he was agreeing with that article. 10 years ago, I was out on the pickets along with all the other writers, and it was weird. It was a strange situation, and it was difficult. It was ugly. But the writers felt it necessary, correctly, I believe, to strike because at that time, the major issue was the AMPTP, the producers and networks, were indicating that the internet was not a viable income stream for content for television and movies. They were just they did not want to include that in the discussion.
Right.
So our understanding as sort of rank and file membership and was that we were striking to get on the board with regards to streaming and subscription video on demand, et cetera. So from that perspective, it was successful. We did get a piece of real estate. The piece that we received as writers was not particularly significant, but in getting the piece, it sent a clear message that, you know, we understood and we want you guys to understand and everybody to understand that this is a viable income stream. And, of course, it's gigantic.
David, do you think that it strengthens the union? Apparently, for this particular strike that may take place, 96.3% of your union members voted strike authorization, saying go ahead and strike. Is that because of what you just said, that there is a perceived feeling that it will be successful and strengthen the union and provide ultimate benefits to its members?
I think it's just like a much more of a fairness issue with, you know, the numbers, $51 billion, those numbers actually come from the company financial reports, the Security Exchange Commission reports. So certainly they need to present these numbers to their boards and their stockholders to indicate their health. So these are the numbers that they're saying. There's not a proportionate increase in by any stretch of the imagination for the writers in either television or films. So there's a lot. There are record profits being made. They've gone up gigantically and doubled in the last 10 years or so. But the writers are seeing cuts. In general, writers are making less money. I can speak of that both empirically in terms of numbers, but also anecdotally in terms of my friend. I have friends both as, you know, writers, directors, and producers and studio execs.
But, you know, it begs the question, and Carrie, I want to hear your response to this, is do the writers deserve it? I mean, it's one thing to say that there's all this money being made by the studios, by the networks. Why should the writers sharing it. It just like in us on a sports team. Do we pay the players if the owners are making all this money? I mean, I'm obviously playing devil's advocate here.
Right.
There is an argument that says, hey, if they can do it, if they can make all this money, and when I say they, I'm referring to the producers, the networks, the studios. If they can do it, why should the writers have any part of it?
Well, as you know, all content, everything, begins with the writers. Maybe the studios might have bought a book, but they need somebody to turn it into a screenplay. They need a way to conceptualize the story and have things for people to say. It's not just movies or television. It's also late night hosts. So what's scary is to think of Kimmel or Fallon or Colbert getting out there without having their staffs. They're going to be in big, you know, those guys are sweating it out right now. That's for sure.
Because people don't realize that's not Jimmy Kimmel delivering his own material. He walks in to the studio and he gets all his notes and his jokes and his material from the writer. So that's a great point.
Writing is everything. And this is what I'm, you know, reading about what's going on. And we talked about this earlier, but the fact that they're asking for a raise what they're asking for, a little under $500 million, compared to the $51 billion, even though we don't know exactly how, if that's net or what we're looking at, $51 billion, and they're only asking for a raise for a half a billion? It doesn't make, why not give it to them? What is going on that's actually stopping that?
There's several things. First of all, that $51 billion, I mean, writing, as a writer, it may sound ironic for me to say this, but writing is not everything. Writing is a major thing. But in fact, let's talk about theme park, for example. That theme park ride may be based on a property that was written by some writer who's no longer with us. But even if it's a contemporary writer, make the case simpler, that theme park ride doesn't exist without the work of Imagineers, engineers, architects, safety people, designers, all sorts of other people who have just as much claim on the proceeds from a worker standpoint, you know, as the writer does. Likewise, you know, talk about Comcast's MSO operations, their local cable operations. You know, there are men and women who go under the street and sort through electrical wires to fix the cable wires to make sure that you get your cable TV service. Don't those people have a call also?
No, here, and this is why I don't think they do. If there is a writer who actually creates, let's take Shonda Rhimes. She creates the show. She creates the entire concept of a show, and there are writers under her. She created it. That's her baby. She's the one that should be getting the money. The other writers are lucky that they have a job because of her creation. Right.
Right.
So why does everybody else get to feed off? And that's okay. I think they're making money. But if you have somebody who actually created it, Let's take the Marvel guy, Stan Lee, right? Mm-hmm. He created everything. He's the one that should be getting all the residuals. He's the one that should be getting all the money. Am I wrong?
But in fact, the Writers Guild is not working primarily for Shonda. This strike, if there is one, is not about whether Shonda gets paid properly or not. It's about other writers who were not the creators.
Right, but they're exactly that's what I'm talking about.
We forgot? And David, just a second. I just want to say one thing because my undergraduate degree is in moral philosophy.
And you live in Los Angeles?
From Brown University. So there you go, a very liberal institution. And I will tell you something, that as an owner of a business, I own my law firm, I really feel I have an obligation to pay my people properly. I would never, ever be such a pig to think that I'm making all these profits and I want people to be happy. I want them to support their families. I want them to do good work. And that's what motivates them. David?
Well, right on. You're a beautiful cat. I like where you're coming from. I mean, that's absolutely right. But it's more than just, there's a moral component, but there's a business component too. This is big business. And we can blame Steven Spielberg and Jaws for that. I mean that with love and respect. Jaws was the first one. The film business, which was, you know, there well before television, that was always an industry, but it was never big business, corporate business, until Jaws came along and it was the first blockbuster and it went through the roof. Huge profits were to be made. It became a really important business, a linchpin in conglomerates and large corporations. It's a dollars and cents issue. From the perspective of the studios, they need to show their stockholders and their investors and their boards a significant profit margin every year. And those numbers do need to go up. They can't flatline or else they're going to be out. So they have their agenda, and that is, you know, a viable and an important agenda for the health of their business.
Go ahead, but I love this because I have both you and Jonathan advocating for the other side.
Well, I want to say there's another piece of the agenda, too, which is the relations with the other unions. So the Directors Guild did their deal a few months ago. The Screen Actors Guild is going to do their deal starting in mid-May. And there are echoes and parallelisms between those unions. So if the Directors Guild, that it operates in a very low-key kind of way and with data and analysts and all this kind of thing, If the studios do a deal with the writers, say, okay, we'll toss in another $200 million—not really that much. Let's just get a deal done and avoid a strike. You know what the next call is going to be? It's going to be from the head of the Directors Guild, the executive director, to the head of the AMPTP, saying, "So why exactly did you screw us? Can you explain that? We were the cooperative ones. These people threatened to strike and gave you headaches, and you're rewarding them." And then meanwhile, the upcoming Screen Actors Guild negotiations, you don't think the Screen Actors Guild would say, well, if the writers are going to get $300 million, we want $400 because our package is always larger.
Good point.
So there's that.
So there's a large body of people, three big significant unions, that are saying, hey, we need to be remunerated in a fair and a philosophically moral fashion, right? But then you got people out there on the street who are actually doing the work. And as a writer for the last 25 years, this is not, you know, in the movies, we drive beautiful golf carts around to parties and laugh and everything. Really, you're slamming your head against the edge of the table 24/7, trying to get it done in time. And they're asking you for rewrite after rewrite for free, even though it's not in your contract.
Right.
And in, you know, and getting, they got you over a barrel. It's great work. But you work your rear end off on it, and it's also very rarefied, so that you have to work a long time to get there.
David, isn't that why you believe that 96.3% of your union authorized a strike?
Yeah, because it's not only the philosophically moral thing to do; it's a dollars and cents fair thing to do, and it's also a necessity because, while writers do receive, they're fairly well remunerated while they're working, a lot of times you're not working. You're in between jobs.
And especially when we talk about what Jonathan talked about earlier, when you're talking about fewer episodes but being tied up for a longer period of time and not getting the remuneration. Now, we are talking to Jonathan Handel, who is an entertainment and technology lawyer. He's of counsel with Troy Gould in Los Angeles, and he is a contributing editor for the Hollywood Reporter. And, of course, David Atkins, assistant professor of communication at Quinnipiac University, writer, member of the WGA. I do want to ask, before we close out, how is this going to affect, and Carrie, I know this is a question that you want to talk about, how is it going to affect the average people? We have a lot of lawyers listening, we have a lot of industry people listening, but we also have a lot of people who just enjoy entertainment. We're getting into a season where it's not exactly the beginning of the year, it's not September, it's not January, some people are out, the weather's getting nicer. Are they going to be impacted by a strike?
They're going to be...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, sure. They're going to be driven to digital platforms and off of linear. So two sets of impacts. One, the local economy, probably $200 million a week. It was $2.1 to $2.5 billion the last strike. That's the effect on people here. But the effect on people who are listening across the country, you will see the late night shows go dark probably immediately. You'll see Saturday Night Live go dark immediately. You will see soap operas go dark pretty quickly. Then comes the half-hour shows, the sitcoms, the one-hour shows. Much later comes the original content for Netflix because they produce it further in advance, and ultimately the motion pictures. And it won't affect your summer motion pictures. Those are already in the can. What this means is that the linear channels, cable and broadcast, will be showing reruns, reality TV, sports, and news. People will be driven off those platforms to Netflix, where the sell is really easy. Number one, we have original, new original content. Come see it. Number two, you missed Breaking Bad. Now's your time to catch it. You stopped after season two. Now's your time to restart.
What's going to make this strike end? What is the number that you think people will come to?
Six.
Well, I think that what's going to happen in terms of online streaming is that people have already seen a lot of the content. There is some new content, but those are AMPTP, which means they are the producers who also will not have any new content. So you'll watch some new stuff. I think Hulu's going to do well if this strike does occur starting on Monday night. I think Hulu is going to get a whole lot of new subscribers. And I think people are going to look around at the different platforms, but at a certain point, after a month or two, viewers are going to get really frustrated and angry, and they're going to say, hey, studios, network heads, please pay the writers what they are, you know, what they're asking for so we can get some new content. They'll get fed up, pissed off, and then they'll start banging on studio doors.
So, Jonathan and David, I want to ask you, what's the number that's going to make everybody happy?
Six. And it's not a dollar figure. It's 6 weeks. Because what happens after 6 weeks is if the strike goes any longer, the fall season gets impaired, yep, and the showrunners lose tons of money. That's number one. Number two, after 6 weeks, the studios can pull the plug on development deals and terminate them,
yep,
under contract provisions.
Friend of mine happened. He got a show, got picked up, was so excited. Strike, the show went out.
The
gone.
Show never,
never came
reappeared.
Back.
Yeah.
And, there's
back. And there are other things.
And I want to hear what David has to say.
Sure.
But what's the number for you?
Well, it's not six. I think the writers are feisty, and the writers know that, unlike other unions, it's very specific, this type of skill. It's not anything people imagine and studio heads imagine. Oh, let's open up another can of writers. But the thing is, there's only a certain number of writers who can do this job, who have trained for a long time and who have the skills. So at 6 weeks, there will be a bend in the action, but the writers aren't going to back off. They're going to double down like they did last time, and they're going to stay in for the long haul.
But they didn't. The showrunners pulled the plug in '88 and 10 years ago.
The showrunners don't run the Writers Guild. The showrunners are sort of cheerleaders, but the rank and file membership has the numbers, and it's all about votes. It's not arbitrary leadership. Making decisions, everybody has to vote. And in with regards to that, we have a larger body of rank and file members. So showrunners do not run the guild.
You know, there's 70 plus pilots that have already been made. And at some point, like you say, Jonathan, they're going to be in doubt for the new season. And I don't know how much the studios and you know, David, you've given the perspective from the writers, and we appreciate it. But at some point, the studios, the networks, producers are going to have to bend a little bit because there's a lot of money to be lost if this goes a long time.
That's it's an immovable force and an irresistible. You know, it's the classic difficulty. And David makes a good point that rank and file are more numerous than showrunners. Showrunners, on the other hand, are wealthier and more powerful and can persuade leadership to change the messaging to the rank and file and then change what, you know, where people end up. So it's very hard to tell.
We have a minute left. Just a very short answer, David. What's your best prediction of what's going to happen?
Me just speaking for myself.
Yeah.
And based on what happened 10 years ago, I think that there's going to be a strike. And I hope that the two sides can come together because it gets ugly for everybody. It's not a good thing.
Right.
But, both sides have to protect their bottom line.
Jonathan?
So
yep. You're right. David, you're right. Jonathan, go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's more likely than not that there will be a strike, but the situation is still extremely fluid. I don't see how they will bridge roughly quarter billion dollar gap, though, in the next day and a half.
He's Jonathan Handel. His handle on Twitter is?
J Handel.
And then, of course, he's got a great website, jhandel.com. If you want to hear from David Atkins, do you have a Twitter handle, David?
I don't have a Twitter handle. I have an email, which is just simply David Ethan Atkins, ATKINS, @gmail.com. Would love to hear some feedback from listeners.
Well, we hope for
everyone's sake that this thing gets resolved. As a lawyer, I'm always looking at resolution versus litigation. And that's the case here. I want to thank David. I want to thank Jonathan for being on Gervie's Law today. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure, Carrie. Pleasure, Alan.
Thanks, guys.